coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio. Located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. This is the Hagman Report for today. It is Tuesday, June 21st, 2022. I can talk. I really can. You know, looking at the date, today's the longest day of the year, isn't it, Eric? Tech? First day of summer?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So there. It's the longest day of the year.
Good thing. I got a lot to do.
plus, now here's something a little bit depressing. If you think about it, days are now going to start getting shorter, at least in the Northern Hemisphere. Okay. Northern Hemisphere? That didn't sound right. Anyway, I guess that
we'll
would be.
We'll have to ask Dan about that.
Yeah. All right. So a couple of things on my radar. Look, there's something going on in North Korea. With respect to a virus, an illness. Liberty Daily reported on this, and it's gastrointestinal in nature. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because there will be another pandemic. You know that, another to force additional lockdowns. And this is gastrointestinal in nature. Some say, well, it's cholera or it's some sort of outbreak, you know, related to the area, I suppose. But the article goes on to state that there are a couple of reasons why there should be some concern. Number one, it doesn't start in China. China already took the hit on the SARS-CoV-2. And second of all, it's gastrointestinal in nature, which corresponds with the food shortages, right? It's a rather interesting take on things. And look, I know that we are at war. We are at war, and I want to get into a very specific aspect of this war in which we find ourselves. Yesterday, I opened the show. I was talking about transhumanism and about how, you know, these elites want to separate themselves from humanity, be elevated to small g gods, live forever, thereby avoiding judgment. And that's well into existence. I mean, we're already seeing that play out right now. But there's a different war here in the United States. That's on a global scale, by the way. And not so, I mean, in the United States as well, but on a global scale. So just from my investigative standpoint, I'm looking at a couple of different things. Okay, you know, what's the most important? If I were dependent on this show to tell me what to look for, I would want to know, like, okay, if I'm in the United States specifically, and even throughout the West, because this template is in place, but specifically in the United States, what do I look for? What should I be watching and concerned about? Maybe that others are blowing off. And I found this. I kind of did this backwards. I found a report on Revolver.news. And Darren Beatty had spoken about this report on Bannon, but I found the report first. And then I went back and I listened to Darren Beatty explain the report on the War Room on the Steve Bannon show. And I'm looking at this from a Christian conservative perspective. Now, if you are a woke leftist purveyor of multi-dimensional genders or whatever, no worries. But, and you know, if you stand in line for the injecticide and you wear 16 masks because Fauci is your God, then don't worry about this. But I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, wait a minute. This is really the type of event that will, how can I really put this in words? This is a type of an event that will continue to give in the form of lawfare. Remember yesterday, I also said the process is the punishment. And anyone involved in lawfare or if you've ever been sued, or if you've ever been arrested and taken through the actual process. Well, they make sure, especially if you're on the wrong side, they make sure that the process is the punishment. And I think everyone is going to find this out sooner or later. We're already starting to see elements of a social credit score being tried here in America, or being ushered in this country. Epoch Times did a great piece in the last edition about the question was, could a social credit score ever take root here in the United States? And the short answer is absolutely yes. And in some cases, elements of that are already in place. But the weaponization, we've seen the weaponization of the intelligence community, of the FBI. We've seen in other elements of the NSA. We've seen the weaponization specifically against conservative Christian elements like you and I. And at the epicenter of this is the January 6th committee. And people are blowing this off. And I understand why you should blow it off, because it's an illegitimate committee. But here we are. We have an illegitimate committee functioning within Congress, attempting, their goal is to prevent Donald Trump, like him, hate him, I don't care, but to prevent him from running again for the presidency. Look, I don't care if he runs or doesn't run. I don't care if you like him or don't like him. Again, this is the process. And this is about the Constitution. This is about the fabric of our country, the laws of our country, and how they can be turned against you because of your ideology. Go ahead and say something on social media, for example, that there are only two sexes, a man and a woman, male, female, that only females can menstruate and get pregnant, and see how long you last. Now apply that to everyday life. And if you hold these beliefs, believe me, they are coming for you. Now, if you also hold the belief that the election was stolen, that the SARS-CoV-2 is a bioweapon, as are the injecticide so-called vaccines. Those are bioweapons. If you hold those views, I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to be bumped up on that list. And if you worship the God of the Bible, wow, that's going to zip you right up there. By the way, speaking of the process being the punishment, I just want to make sure everyone's aware that I'm going to be next week. The schedule is going to be upset. I have to be in Washington, D.C. for at least 2 days. Probably Tuesday and Wednesday. At this moment, that's kind of what I'm thinking right now. And I'm not going to get into why I need to be there those 2 days, but end the story. So just kind of a heads up there. All right. So the process is the punishment. But the January 6th committee, there's something very nefarious about it. Well, Darren Beatty in Revolver News found a very nefarious element within the January 6th committee. So we'll do it this way, the opposite way that I found this out. We're going to play the clip of Darren Beatty first, and then I'm going to hit the Revolver.news article that gets into the guts of what he's saying. It takes it just a tad deeper than his interview with Steve Bannon. And I have to warn you, the interview is a little bit lengthy, so hang with me here, and I might interrupt at times. And Steve Bannon does a great job introducing this, but also talking about the energy situation in Europe. So if we can, go ahead and play clip one.
We got some breaking news. Darren Beatty, because of all this hoopla over J6 and Ukraine, right? We're now the Ukrainians are now, you know, they got on Friday, they had the EU guys all show up to say, basically, we want you to be in the EU, which is going to cause a whole other set of nightmares. That's a cover of the Financial Times of London on Friday. Of course, today, Germany's saying they're going to light up their old coal plants. Hey, how's that? Hey, Joe Biden, how's the Paris Accords coming for you? Hey, John Kerry, where's those Paris Accords? I don't see John Kerry over there. The old coal plants in the Ruhr Valley are going to be fired up because now they understand that the natural gas are going to be out of gas this winter. It's going to be cold and hungry because Russia's got a double-barrel shotgun. This is all inextricably linked, but you've done an amazing job of tying together the color revolutions, what our globalists, and let's be blunt, on our watch, they built an American empire on globalism. That is not what the founders had in mind. They warned us about this. It's not what the men at Normandy died for. It's not what they died for in Guadalcanal, right? It's not what they died for in the jungles of Vietnam. It's not what they died at the 38th parallel in Korea. That's not what they died for. But you got guys, and I'm gonna let you introduce the villains, Darren Beatty, of who's actually driving this agenda.
Now, this is an amazing story up on Revolver.News right now. It's white hot. We published a lot of January 6th. If you want to understand the lawfare component of January 6th, which is crucial in this phase of the committee's development, this is the piece at Revolver.News. So who's the villain, as you ask? Well, years ago, old school Revolver fans will recall a name of Norm Eisen. Now, just very briefly, he was Obama's former ethics czar, legal hatchet man against Trump. He's involved in multiple, like 16 impeachment efforts against the president. He wrote the impeachment case before the president's nothing burger call even happened. The guy was there from day one working with David Brock. The memo cites him. Very bad guy. He happens to also be a color revolution professional who wrote a playbook, literally called the playbook, on how to conduct color revolutions to overthrow authoritarian leaders overseas. He applied the same playbook against Trump up to 2020. But that wasn't so successful. It was partially successful. It was partially successful because there's still the prospect of 2024, Trump coming in and getting a second term. And that's what they need to stop at all costs. And that's what's going on with the January 6th committee. That's why everyone's pushing for the prospect of a criminal indictment, to hold the prospect of a criminal indictment over the head of the presumptive front runner for the GOP. So we did a little bit of digging. Why is Norm Eisen cheerleading the criminal prosecution aspect of January 6th? Well, it turns out his fingerprints are all over the January 6th witch hunt going back to the beginning. Just some quick data points. You got to read the whole piece. Quick data point. Most people don't know this. Steve, you happen to know this. Most people don't know this, that Benny Thompson, in his personal capacity, sued Trump, Giuliani, Proud Boys and Oath Keepers, basically in a case, ridiculous case, alleging a conspiracy whereby Trump colluded with these militia groups in order to incite this insurrection. It's a ridiculous theory, but the fact that Benny Thompson, who led a lawsuit in his personal capacity with a specific theory of January 6th that basically renders Trump criminally liable, should go on to be the chair of the supposedly objective fact-finding January 6th committee. That alone is a scandal. But when you dig further into this, you'll note, you know, Benny Thompson, he's not a bright guy. He didn't write this by himself. The lawsuit came out in February, barely a month after January 6th. Is he sitting in the basement scrambling, you know, doing legal research and coming up with this theory? No. Who's doing the theorizing? Who is the lawyer? None other than Joseph Sellers, who works for a law firm called Cohen Milstein. And it just turns out, his Revolver is uncovered, he's friends with Norm Eisen. Norm Eisen calls him his good friend, but they're more than friends. They're more than friends. They actually have collaborated in lawfare efforts against Trump going all the way back to 2017. Well, that's a hell of a coincidence that Norm Eisen's lawfare partner, with whom he has collaborated in a series of lawsuits to badger and harass and really overthrow Trump going back to 2017, is good friends with the guy who's the architect of the personal lawsuit against Trump by the future head of the January 6th committee that then goes on to be like the premise, the dominant theory of the January 6th committee's case.
Pause that for a second. Okay, I hope everyone just understood that there was a ton of information packed in there. Okay, Benny Thompson, relationship with Norm Eisen, where David Brock comes into this, the lawsuit by Thompson. By the way, that lawsuit was that they, Donald Trump et al., violated the KKK or Ku Klux Klan Act of 1871 to prevent by force, intimidation, or threat any office holder from performing their duties. Okay, now, again, the process is the punishment in this case. But you can kind of put a bookmark there in the – it gives you a good idea of most of the key players here. But they're going after a criminal indictment of President Trump, just as they did thereby making sure he cannot run for office again. Now, that should be of concern to everyone because this is the template, although the larger aspect of the template, that is going to be used for all of us. Okay, the lawfare aspect and the elements of this, and you can also tell that there's some elements of social engineering in this committee. And I'm going to leave that for another time, but I think you can tell. All right, go ahead and continue with this.
That serves as a basis for all this ridiculous prosecution talk. And so we go into it. There's much more. Norm Eisen was actually an amicus. He filed an amicus brief on behalf of Benny Thompson for a suit that when Trump sued the January 6th committee, his fingerprints are all over it. And there's one last thing, a very, very dark element of Norm Eisen's new lawfare outfit. Before he was conducting his lawfare operations against Trump under an outfit called Crew. He has since left Crew, and now his new organization is called States United. He co-founded this with a woman called Christine Todd Whitman, who is probably best known for falsely telling people, first responders after 9/11, that the air was safe, and now thousands of people have died, partially due to the misleading claims that she gave. And actually, she was forced to apologize for this on the 50th anniversary of 9/11. But she isn't even the most scandalous member of Norm Eisen's outfit. One thing you'll notice if you go to the Revolver.news page and look into this is the outfit that Norm Eisen's part of has not one, not two, but three former heads of the Department of Homeland Security as advisors on the board. Now, his Norm Eisen's previous lawfare outfit had zero DHS people. Why is he all of a sudden, for his new lawfare venture pertaining to January 6th specifically, loading his organization with former heads of the DHS, three to be exact? Well, it's because, as Revolver has reported, the DHS is at the forefront of the war on domestic war on terror against American citizens, using the false narrative propounded by the January 6th committee as its pretext. And as again I pointed out on your show, who is the Department of Homeland Security's stooge within the Congress? None other than Benny Thompson, who is actually the chair of the Homeland Security Committee and has been for years. So there are so many dark connections here. Yeah. You have to read the whole piece at Revolver.news.
I want everybody to read it. And as Artis reads, we'll have you back on tomorrow to deconstruct it more. Once again, how did they get to it, Darren?
Revolver.news. It's up at the top. And if you haven't seen our original classic piece on Norm Eisen that really brought his name to national attention and the concept of color revolution, even more importantly, go to Revolver.news now. Read the top piece. Share it. This is the blueprint for the lawfare component of the January 6th witch hunt against Trump, his supporters, and really all of us.
And there it is. And there it is. Folks, please understand how critically important this is, even if people say, well, you know, I'm not watching that crap or I don't care about that stuff. It doesn't matter. It does matter. And by the way, I am absolutely ashamed And David Ridge, if you're listening to this as the brother of Tom Ridge, shame on you and shame on your family. I think your mom would be ashamed of Tom and this whole thing. I don't know. I have history going back with Tom Ridge sometime when he was a prosecutor here in Erie County. But shame on Tom Ridge is one of the three former DHS heads, part of this advisory board. You have Tom Ridge, Chertoff, and Napolitano. What a crew. What a nappy-headed... summoning the other talk show host. What a crew, right? Nappy-headed. Who said that? That was the gentleman that passed away here several years ago. I can't think of his name. The talk show host. Got in a lot of trouble for saying that, too. Of course, he followed that up with an H word. But anyway. All right. So let's go to revolver.news, because this is critically important, no matter what you think. I mean, you might say again, No, they're out. They are corralling the wagons at this point. And I guess maybe I shouldn't say that. That's probably racist to say. But they're corralling the wagons and making sure their guns are pointed outward against all of us. And the method, the means, is going to be the January 6th committee, and to demonize. And of course, to solidify, well, to create the appearance of legitimacy, as well as solidify the ability, the methods, especially on the intelligence/criminal side, they brought in DHS people. Now, if you go to the Revolver, in fact, let's go ahead and put up the Revolver article, if you don't mind, Eric the Tech, on okay, there we go. And I just want to go through this very quickly, but again, because Darren Beattie did a great job outlining this, but there are a couple of facts here that I really think that you really need to kind of understand. So you've got the architecture for the J6 committee really established back in 2016, 2017, and the anti-MAGA, the anti-American aspects of this going back to the first run of Donald Trump, 2016, 2017. This is where the J6 committee has its roots. So some of the people behind the scenes, of course, and I should say this too, as the article says, this egregious, I'll read verbatim here. We've gotten a taste of this in the egregious and ultimately unsuccessful attempts of Democratic lawfare operations to use the January 6th Fed insurrection as a pretext to remove MAGA stalwart Marjorie Taylor Greene from the ballot. Remember, they took her to court and tried to get her tossed off the ballot so she could not run. Remember that? Oh, yeah. Yeah, they failed miserably. So let's go to Merrick Garland, if you don't mind, because of the time. Let's go to Merrick Garland, because something Merrick Garland said that's embedded in this report, but nonetheless, something he said we ought to be paying attention to. So if we can go to video 2, hopefully we can reduce it down to just a minute or two on video 2. Go ahead. No, I'm sorry. Go. Yeah. Okay, we're working on video 2. This is AG Merrick Garland. And ultimately what he stated, I'm watching and I will be watching all of the hearings. What, you got nothing better to do? Okay. They can't file a report with you? You got to watch it on television? And I can assure you that the January 6th prosecutors are watching all of the hearings as well. Let me tell you something. There will be criminal charges filed. There will be charges filed against sitting members of Congress. There will be criminal charges filed against people like you and me. Trust me on this, whenever you're ready.
I wanted to ask you whether you had a chance to look at the hearings or watch the hearings on Capitol Hill on the January 6th by the January 6th committee, and if you've learned anything perhaps that could be useful in the Justice Department's work?
So I am watching, and I will be watching all the hearings, although I may not be able to watch all of it live. But I'll be sure that I'll be watching all of it. And I can assure you that the January 6th prosecutors are watching all the hearings as well. On this, which I'll now count as your third question, look, I'm not going to be able to give response, you know, give you an idea of how my own personal responses to this or the kind of evidence that are coming out. And, you know, I want to just explain a little bit more, although I did start explaining a little bit more, I think the last time we were all together, 2 weeks ago or so, a press conference. You know, the Justice Department's long-standing position is that we don't comment on ongoing investigations. We do that both for the viability of our
investigation. Get this, get him out of here. He is the spear for, he's the weapon for the left, the entirety of the left, and specifically the Biden regime. And I suspect he holds a grudge that he wasn't, he's not sitting on the Supreme Court right now. Bested, of course, by Djibouti Jackson Brown person. Jackson Brown. I'm kidding. You know what I'm talking about, right? All right. But look into this. The links will be in the program description box at HagmanReport.com. I urge you to dig down and follow the links, because David Brock, who, by the way, Media Matters, you know Media Matters, right? David Brock, head of Media Matters for America. The man who implemented the David Brock blueprint for suing the president into paralysis and his allies into bankruptcy, which, again, it happens. It is a tool. And again, you've got to think about yourselves and others, especially others who speak on your behalf or at least give you the information for your consumption. This is the guy that's heading, of course, is the guy, head guy behind the scenes, Norm Eisen. So there's a great piece linked within that article about Norm Eisen, legal hatchet man and central operative in the color revolution against President Trump. Follow the breadcrumbs on this one. You've got to follow the breadcrumbs. All right. That's what I really wanted to get into that and tell you about this, because I really believe you're going to see some sparks fly here in the next several weeks, or as the January 6th committee gets ready to present their findings. And their findings will, of course, be extremely detrimental and could spark some unrest here. And, of course, that unrest will do what? Will definitely, absolutely be the predicate for strong action against the Patriots. I'm telling you that this is what's going to happen. I can see it from a mile away, using this as the template for everyday Americans. I am telling you, just read the article, watch that clip again, read the article, follow the links, and tell others, but understand what is coming. All right. Today's episode is sponsored by Honey. You know, what is your favorite thing to shop for online? Is it easy to find deals for it? I know Eric the Tech and I, we do some online shopping. I know my family does as well. But sometimes we look for coupon codes, especially on higher ticket items. And they're a little bit more difficult to find. Well, we don't have to do that anymore, thanks to Honey. Okay, this is a fabulous service. Take advantage of this, please. Do yourself a favor. Thanks to Honey, manually searching for coupon codes is a thing of the past. Honey is a free shopping tool that scours the internet for promo codes and applies the best one it finds to your cart. It supports over 30,000 stores online, ranging from tech and gaming products to popular fashion brands, even food delivery. We've saved money, and we're constantly saving money, even today, with Honey on food delivery. Absolutely. We're constantly saving money on equipment upgrades that we make. Constantly. The last time we saved, it was we purchased something for, I think it was $125. roughly 124 and change. And we ended up saving about, I don't know, it was like 10, 11%, I calculated. And it was fabulous using Honey. And it was so easy. How it works, just imagine you're shopping on one of your favorite sites. When you check out, the Honey button drops down. All you have to do is click. All you have to do is click Apply Coupons. Wait a few seconds. Honey searches for coupons that you can find for the site. If Honey finds a working coupon, you'll watch the prices drop. And again, Honey has saved us so much money. We could not do online shopping without it. You can add Honey to your phone, your iPhone, as well. Just enable it on Safari, and you can find savings on the go. Now, here's what you need to do. If you don't already have Honey, you could be straight up missing out. It's literally free, installs in a few seconds, and by getting it, you'll be doing yourself a solid and supporting this podcast. Look, folks, I'd never recommend something I don't use. Get Honey for free. Now, listen to this carefully. At joinhoney.com/Hagman. Two N's on Hagman. That's joinhoney.com/Hagman. H-A-G-M-A-N-N. I'm telling you, it's worth its weight in gold or silver or platinum even. That's joinhoney.com/Hagman. Good friends to have, good friends of the show. And I'll tell you what, it really, really works. All right. Excuse me, if it's Tuesday, it's Tuesdays with Stan. Stan Dale, standale.com is his website. Make sure you support Stan and his work by way of Patreon. Just go to standale.com, follow the links there. And of course, sign up. His meetings are fabulous. His Patreon meetings, once a month, they're fabulous. They're informative. Also, empshield.com. Use promo code Hagman, empshield.com, promo code Hagman. For $50 off purchase of one. And by the way, get one for your car, your house, your boat, your generator. Protect your assets so your wires don't get fried. That's empshield.com, promo code Hagman. You'll be glad you did on that too. But Stan Dale working hard as always. Go to standale.com, bookmark his website, and please check the headlines every day, as well as the show images page, from which we'll be working off of right now. With that, Stan Dale, how you doing, sir?
Oh, good. How are you this evening,
sir? Oh, good. Good, good, good.
Oh, yeah. Well, a few things happening out there in the news. Normal stuff, you know, the depressing developments here and there.
Yep.
Yeah. I didn't know where to start today. There's so many things I looked at. I think the first thing on the show images page would be Pope Francis, slide 58, Eric. The St. Malachi prophecy about the number of popes before the last pope who would betray the sheep. And that's from St. Malachi's prophecies from about the 12th century. Yeah, he was the bishop of Armagh. And people have been studying that, saying, okay, we're here now. And this Pope Francis isn't Peter the Roman, as the prophecies stated. But what we're seeing here in this news report is that this pope is he's going to resign, it looks like. If you click on the text below, there's the rumors around the Vatican are that he's about to resign from ill health and the stress of the job and that kind of stuff. Now, if he does that, I don't know whether that just kills the St. Malachi prophecy of the popes, or whether his replacement will be Peter the Roman. I don't know, but I'd hate to be the guy that's called Peter the Roman. This guy here, this Pope Francis, he's done so many things that were really betraying, Christ's principles, that I thought surely he fit the bill, but who knows? Just keep an eye on this and see what happens with the Pope and who replaces him. It's all part of end time prophecies.
Wow.
Yeah. What do you make of that? I mean,
I don't know anymore. I really don't. The Vatican is certainly a player in the end times. I don't know what to make of any kind of talk of resignation. Tom Horn blew my mind along with Chris Putnam when they came on our show and said, the current Pope was going to resign, and bada bing, bada bang, it happened. I can see that, but I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I don't.
So you haven't heard anything from the other guys about whether he might be resigning?
No, but don't go by me, because I haven't asked. So,
right.
You know, but
might be a thing to ask and see what they think about it. You know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Let's go over to international stuff here in slide 59. In China, several of the cities, the people are standing in line for hours to pull their cash out of their bank accounts. You know, I don't know whether that's going to do them much good when we go to digital cash. But the thing is that the people in China are feeling the threat of a, you know, collapse and of money not being available and stuff like that. So that's probably coming to us and to a bank near us one of these days soon. Again, as I've discussed over your show many times, these bank activities, there's no way to put cash, you know, under your bed or, you know, have gold and silver and stuff and defeat what the Illuminists are doing. They're going to herd us into a one world system that's digital with cryptocurrency and with blockchain tracking our every purchase or disbursement. It is almost upon us. And so in China, the people are feeling that. That's why they're standing in line to get their cash, but they don't realize that it's not going to help them. There's just everything you can think of that we have all talked about to prepare for the crunch has been anticipated by the Illuminists. One of the things that I've talked about a number of times is that I believe that there's going to be a disclosure event for the quote-unquote aliens or the fallen ones, which will say, look, we see that you're in trouble here, and that the Illuminists on your planet, the bankers and whatever, have really robbed you. And so we're going to set up a new world government, put our man in charge of the planet, and the bad guys, you know, the bankers, the Illuminists, all that, are going to be kicked out, and we're here to help you. And it's like Reagan said, you know, it's like, this is from the world government, and it knocks on the door, and I'm here to help you run the other direction. So keep your eyes open for full disclosure. That's definitely what's going to be happening.
Well, ESG, I just want to say the ESG, this progressive ideology called environmental, social, and governance, ESG thing, ideology, is affecting corporations right now, and banks and corporations. And I can see where this is going to, where the U.S. could be following China in imposing social credit scores and digital currency to track and then to control the population, as you said. Go ahead.
Yeah, this social credit stuff is just so invasive. It's just amazing. Yeah, let's keep an eye on that. As I say, basically what you've got in your house is what you're going to be stuck with when this happens. I don't know how we're going to be paying like land taxes and anything else. If your house is all paid for and you're free of debt, they're still going to get you with taxation. And, you know, what we've prepared for will probably last a few months, you know, before the government that does replace the Illuminati will say, look, we're forming a peaceful one world government. And, you know, if your neighbors are still hoarding stuff and guns and things like that, you need to tell us about it so that we can talk to them and, you know, maybe even give you a portion of what we collect from them because they've been hoarding stuff that we need as resources on the planet. This is where it's headed. And it'll be like you know, World War II, Nazi Germany.
Yep.
People ratted on their neighbors.
And you're gonna see where major banks, insurance companies, they've already pledged to use their power to cut carbon emissions, not just within their businesses, but across their entire portfolios, including wrapping those into all lending decisions. And the digital part of this as well, there's a company, and I'm looking for the name that has signed on to this, that has a microchip. So in case you don't want to carry like a card around for your digital currency, they can put a microchip into your hand, is what they're advertising. And of course, biblically, you know, this is all biblically prophesized. So there we have it.
Yep. We're seeing it happen. They'll probably make it less painful. You know, instead of injecting a capsule, they may put a conductive tattoo, in essence, on your body that can be read. And that will substitute for that capsule being injected, because a lot of people are somewhat apprehensive about having a a thing stuck in her head or their arm or whatever, but it is coming.
Yep.
You know, the Swedish have been looking at it with some sort of ID and with capsules. But I know that, you know, personally, I don't like needles that much anyway, but the size of those capsules is like a grain of rice, and the needle is even bigger than that. And so they're going to have to go to a mark, a tattoo, and people will accept that. And certainly that will follow, like you're saying.
Yep, absolutely. And consider what happened in Canada, you know, when bank accounts were frozen. Personal access to bank accounts were frozen because of the trucker freedom rally up there. All this is going to happen here. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. So, you know, it's what you've got in your house or on your property that you're going to have to handle this crisis with. No money in the bank and, you know, people running around like crazy.
Load up on the ammo.
Be prepared now.
Get the ammo.
Yeah, the precious lead, the precious metals lead. Yeah,
lead. Eric the Tech, bring another pallet of ammo. Let's go get another pallet. Come on.
I saw something kind of tickled me a bit over in Saudi Arabia. That's in slide 51 on the show images page. Saudi Arabia begins rainbow raids to pull any and all LGBT toys from the shelves. Now, I'm not advocating that we go to Islam or, you know, become Muslims, but it's cool that they at least have common sense about getting rid of all this LGBT stuff. The Saudi crackdown comes as some nations celebrate June as Pride Month, you know, gay pride or LGBT pride or whatever, including the administration of President Joe Biden, who travels to Saudi Arabia next month. Now, I've had conflicting reports of whether Biden is going to see MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, in Saudi Arabia or not. Definitely the relationship between the two has been very, very strained. MBS not wanting to even take phone calls from Biden. He considers him to be an idiot. But anyway, this article here is just a bit of a hoot. You can click on the picture and see what they're taking off the shelves. And they're saying it's against Islam, the rainbow colored toys and clothes. And it contradicts the Islamic faith. So it's a big crackdown against homosexuality, et cetera, and LGBT.
Well, there's that. Okay.
Yeah. Look at him. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
You know what? I'm okay with that. Go ahead. This in your face, let's celebrate a whole month. I mean, mom had one day, dad had one day. We're going to take a whole month to celebrate. Mm-hmm. Never mind.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Weirdness. Pure weirdness.
Okay.
Yeah. China, in slide 60, they've launched a third aircraft carrier. Now, their aircraft carriers in the past have either been remodeled Russian aircraft carriers, or they have been built on the Russian aircraft carrier design. But this one is a new one, the 003, and there's a picture of it there. You can click on that in slide 60. And you can see the troops all out as they're celebrating the launching of this 003 Fujian super aircraft carrier. And that's one that the Chinese themselves have designed from scratch and built. So the world knows what they've got, you know, is technology on it. They are using a form of magnetic launching, like the U.S. Navy developed here a few years back to launch aircraft with a magnetic sling, if you wish. It takes the aircraft and shoves it off of the plane with a magnetic rail rather than steam and that kind of stuff. It was a bit dangerous, but they've copied that. So but they've made a slight change to it in their designs, but other than that, this is their new jobby. Now they also have, let me just see here on the article, they've got the ability to make not only the aircraft carrier, which they've just done, but they've also been doing other things like the smaller craft, corvettes, frigates, destroyers, amphibious assault ships, everything. So they've been able to make all their own stuff now, which, and they're going into space as well, space station. So basically they are set to enter the world stage and to be the world leader, you know, the prime nation of the planet. That's what they're headed for. And this 003 aircraft carrier is kind of their signature for saying we are here now. So have a look at that article and see all the things that they can build and attack us with. It's fun.
Well, I remember you saying that, I believe it was you, well, I know you said it, and maybe not the only person to say it, but the Navy, our naval force, second to none, is the reason why we have such power. And now if China is one-upping us on the naval assets, well, that's not good. No one likes that.
No, the Navy, you know, like the British, when they developed their Navy, they became a world power with that. And that was the height of technology to be able to go around the planet and move troops in and around and trade and that kind of things. And we've kind of followed suit with that. But now then, the next arena is in space. And certainly there's a lot going on out there. And China is moving into position out there like crazy with their own space station. I mean, even Iran's trying to get stuff into orbit up there so that they can drop it on us. I'm sure most of theirs is warfare rather than science, but we have to see that coming. One of the things that I found this week, looking through the various articles, there was about 2 weeks ago, the Webb telescope, which has 32 collectors on it, you know, for imaging. One of the panels got hit by a small, tiny little fragment moving at about 17 to 18,000 miles an hour, and it fairly well damaged that optical or image sensor. This is a problem in space. There's a lot of dust just normally in space, and it comes from comets and various other things that are noisy and throw off dust, and they eventually settle on nearby gravitational bodies like the Earth or the Moon. So it is an issue that we have to deal with when traveling in space. And all these satellites out there, you know, like the space station, they are subject to impacts from these tiny hair diameter sized, a grain of sand diameter sized particles that hit with enough force to blow a hole in the wall of the space station or of satellites. Now, in slide 47, is something that I didn't even know they've been using on a lot of the recent satellites. It's called a Whipple a shield. And basically, it's a series of surfaces that are separated by, you know, a gap. If you click on the picture, you can see this better. You can see the outer shell being on the left side, moving toward the inner shell. And what this does is when a particle hits it, a lot of its energy is absorbed by the first layer of this Whipple shield. And so it goes into the second layer without so much energy, in the third and the fourth, et cetera, so that when it reaches the interior where the instrumentation is for the satellite, that it doesn't damage it. But this is really an issue that has to be addressed in space travel and in the future, like, you know, Star Trek type stuff. When you're traveling at the speed of light or faster in an envelope, the things that you hit, now imagine that we're looking at damage from 17 to 18,000 mile an hour particles, but when you're going at the speed of light or faster, if that's done, then the damage to your craft is going to be enormous. It will annihilate you if you hit something. So you can't just use a rocket and shove yourself out there at that speed. You have to be able to build a field that scoots out ahead of the spaceship and back around so that when you hit a particle, you don't hit it, your field does, and it throws it out to the side and behind you. And that's the way we'll be able to overcome this eventually, is to not hit the things, is to scoot them around us. It's kind of like breaststroking through the medium of space. Yeah, anyway, that's the Whipple shield there, and that's the best solution they've gotten so far at these low speeds of, you know, 17 or 18,000 miles an hour. Low speeds. Oh, yeah. Okay. In slide 46, there's more of the article about the orbital debris. And they say they've got 1,500 pieces of orbital debris floating around in space. Well, there's a lot more than that, but that's just what they've been able to detect out there. We really have to figure out a way to sweep orbits out there, to sweep them clean of these tiny particles without wiping out the satellites we've got for communication, various other things. Definitely a serious problem, you know, high-speed garbage out there. It's very dangerous. Lord only knows what's going to happen when one side or the other, Russia, China, United States, whatever, when we start blowing up bags of sand out there in orbit to wipe out the other guy's communications and observation posts and space station. A lot of that stuff's going to rain down. Even the Hopi told Holly and I, when we were down there, there's going to be habitation in the heavens that will fall to the earth in the last days of this age. And I assume that will probably be like a space station of some sort that gets wrecked or by either the sun or, you know, mass ejections or by warfare, and it's going to come down on us. Yeah. Anyway, that's space.
Wow.
Space.
All right.
Let's go back up to slide 55. New York Times says the Iranian nuclear facilities go deep to withstand bunker busters, cyber attacks, et cetera, et cetera. Israeli and U.S. intelligence officials are keeping an eye on Iran's construction of a vast new underground nuclear facility just south of the Natanz nuclear site. Now, you know, Israelis have been in there and bombed that place several times now then, but the Iranians want to have that site for their nuclear development, fuel development. And so they have to go at least 26 feet deep to, you know, defeat a bunker buster bomb, which, you know, it really jars your teeth when they drop one of those on you. And the place to go nowadays is to go deep, either under ocean or under land, to have your facilities away from, you know, detection and or destruction by other, you know, opposition forces to your development. Iran is definitely, I mean, they're trying to develop their own nuclear weapons and things like that, but they've got connections with Russia, and I'm sure that and China, when the time comes, that they will get what they need to attack Israel. We know that the Arab nations are joining together to form a joint defense against Iran, because Iran will come after them as well, having a more militant form of Islam. So when you see that Mohammed bin Salman has gone over to Egypt and is going to visit various other Arab nations and is telling Biden, look, I don't have time for you, that there's an Arab consortium forming very quickly here. And this is dangerous, because they're going to be saying that they're against the Iranian form of terrorism and that kind of stuff, and allegedly to defend Israel. But that whole body of Arab nations can just as suddenly change and go after Israel. I mean, there are still peace negotiators from Iran and Saudi Arabia talking to each other. So if they, instead of becoming enemies, they join each other, this could be a horrible threat to Israel. And this is not news to Israel. They know that. But you don't want to be attacked when your own country, like in Israel, like here in the United States, when your own country is in disarray, when you're on the verge of civil war. I know that the government in Israel is a very strange type of government. It's a bit like Australia, you know, where they have these different parties and they form coalitions to form a government. Well, we know that there's going to be a new election now. The existing government, which is kind of left wing, opposite of like Netanyahu's group, they're in slide 52. They're saying here, okay, well, we're going to call this election. And that makes the eighth election in the last 40 months, I believe they said. So they're in disarray in their own house. And they're claiming that Netanyahu is a criminal. He's on trial for various crimes of bribery and that kind of junk. Netanyahu's telling everybody in slide 53, you know, well, I don't believe all this brainwashing, you know, charade that the left, you know, the socialist type government that's running Israel is doing. And so it's in disarray when you need to have a firm hand to defend your country against, you know, Iran and Iran's presence in the Lebanon, just north of Israel on the border there. There's a rabbi that's in slide 54, rabbi, Eliyahu, that's his last name, has said that all this bantering between Netanyahu and Bennett and their parties, their coalitions, is, you know, about to form a civil war, an open civil war in Israel. You can't be divided amongst yourselves and to defend yourselves against a mounting enemy the size of the Arab nations.
It's not just us, it's Israel too. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's both of us. And it's because we're the big and little Satan, according to the Islamists in the Middle East.
Well, the ideological divide here is not getting any better. And I think it's being stoked by the people who want to see we want to see globalism implemented in the fashion that you alluded to and or explained initially. And I think The bottom line is, you know what, we're going to have to fight or die, barring anything in between. So there's that. Go ahead.
Yeah, and part of this trips that Mohammed bin Salman, Saudi Arabia, of course, is making, is to Turkey, to Erdogan. Now, if Turkey and Saudi Arabia join, that pretty much puts Israel in a vice, southern and northern borders, Turkey being to the north and Saudi Arabia to the south, plus the Arab consortium with Jordan and Egypt. All this is mounting, showing us certainly that there's a very rapid formation of this coalition against Israel and hence the United States. It's about to happen. I don't know how we're going to get out of this without somebody getting hurt, without a bit of a nuclear exchange, perhaps. And to think that we have a strongest navy, strongest army, et cetera, now then is folly. Members of the Department of Defense have said here recently in the press that we are weak compared to the Chinese and Russian developments, primarily the Chinese. That our technology is falling behind. And people say to me, or say on TV about Biden and his administration, why is he being so dumb? Why is he doing this, this, and that? He's being run by minders who are doing everything they can to weaken the United States, to weaken our resolves to resist, and to destroy our democracy with all these illegals and terrorists that are being led into the country. It is part of a plan. And it's not stupidity. It's just that they're following orders from the minders who are definitely trying to destroy the United States and our Christian way of life.
Right.
You can't solve this, can you? I mean, not with with normal, elections and banter on the news, whatever.
I think we can solve it. All right. I just don't know if we have the stomach to solve it. And by that, I mean, to me, you cannot solve it, like you were saying, through normal channels. You can't go through a system that's already broken. You can't play. It's like walking into a casino that's super rigged. All of them are rigged, but super rigged. The odds are in favor of the house. But, you're not going to win. You're not going to win playing their games on their tables with their cards, with their dice. You're not going to win. So, you know what? You got two choices. You can either take it or you can fight. And sadly, I think it's the latter that we don't have the stomach to do. And that's why I think that we're going to, a lot of people, hey, cable TV, your remote, your air conditioning, it's all good. You got some, whatever in the refrigerator, food and stuff. I'm comfortable. It's not in my house, not affecting me, right? So.
Yeah, sadly, a lot of people are that way, Doug. They're after their latte and their social media contacts and things like that. And it's going to catch up with them. They'll suddenly realize that when they go to the fridge and go to grab a soda or whatever it is, that it's not there. And they go to drive to the store. It costs so much they can't afford it. I just looked at it the other day. I had to go into the doctor's office there for an annual checkup. And I compared what it would cost me last year to this year. It was like over double. Just to drive up there, it's only 12 miles away, but I thought, wow, it's twice as much just to drive to the doctor now, and it's heading much higher. And you and I, we're aware of this. People like us, we're aware of it. And but there are so many people that just aren't, until it's suddenly in their wallet, in their face, and they go to the shops, like Holly was in yesterday looking at some stuff, and we're well provisioned. But she said she noticed that the peanut butter shelf in Walmart was empty. That was over some scare about salmonella or things like that. But there are other products that are being taken off the shelf because they can't get deliveries. And then there was this morning's news where there were like 12,000 pilots, a shortage of 12,000 pilots for airlines to fly planes. I don't know how that's happened. Maybe it's because they didn't want the COVID shot or what.
Huh.
Did you see that?
I did. Gee, let me think why that would happen. What's changed? Okay. Maybe, just maybe, it's the policy of the airlines, various airlines, with respect to the injecticide. Yeah, maybe that's it. But no, you know what? It's bad weather. I heard there was bad weather somewhere in the United States, so that's why, people had to be stacked up like Lemmings at Newark and New York, LaGuardia and Newark. So, okay.
Yeah, well, that doesn't explain why there aren't pilots, except for they're resisting the injections for COVID and that kind of stuff. And good on them. But, there are so many things collapsing around, so many systems.
I don't know whether you saw this. Speaking of that, just very brief diversion.
Yeah.
So at the CMS, I believe it's the whoever oversees and enforces policy at Department of Health and Human Services, whatever department that is, a memo came out, and I saw this yesterday, and I thought it was a joke. I really did, until I looked into it. So the enforcers of the COVID policy for the Department of Health and Human Services, they're exempt from any kind of like having to get the injection, but they enforce the rules of the people underneath them getting the injection for the Department of Health. So anyway, it's just you can't make any of this stuff up, and it's only getting worse. And you know what? It's gonna go to another. This will never leave us. I'm telling people are thinking, well, I'm glad that's over. I'm glad. No, it's not over. In fact, it's just starting, in my view. Go ahead.
Yeah, it is. And look, I think you and I, and Steve, and a bunch of the others out there have done all we can for years now then to get people ready to face what we're about to face. Sadly, for the great majority of those out there that have not seen or heard what we've been asking them to consider, it's going to be a shock, and their reaction is going to be like a knee-jerk reaction. Again, predictable from the globalists and their massive chess moves. All of us that are like watchmen on the wall, sit back and watch this thing from a high place and looking down on the earth. As a game, as a chessboard, and we can see all these moves going toward a particular goal, and that is the enslavement of the entire population of the earth under a one world order that will have absolute authority over life and death. And so we sit here and we look at it, and sometimes I stand out the back on the deck and I look out in the clouds and I think, boy, this is a hollow victory to say I told you so, because we're right in the middle of it now.
Yeah. Anyway. And you wrote about a two cosmic conspiracy, folks. Cosmic conspiracy. I'm going to tell you. Way ahead of its time and very relevant today. If you haven't gotten it, go to standale.com and order the book Cosmic Conspiracy. I'm telling you, it's good. It's good stuff.
All right. Slide 43. With broad swaths of fertile farmland, Ukraine has long acted as Europe's breadbasket. The after effects of Russia's invasion 3 months ago are just starting to be felt, but are feared to be far-reaching. Now, basically, what it's saying is there's going to be famine that will actually be in Europe and in Africa because of the shortage of grain that we used to get out of Ukraine. I didn't know how much we depended, the world did, on grain from Ukraine, but I think Israel has been stockpiling certain grains and things, kind of like Joseph did. Anticipating the famine. And we're seeing that now. Russia has done it, and Israel has done it, and those of us that are preppers have done it, and who side with Israel. So, again, it's a warning saying, look, we're going to have famine, food shortages, whatever, and it's upon us. I mean, but the inflation, that's just amazing, the inflation. Anyway, I say amazing, but it's all falling into a plan that we can see from the wall where we sit.
Yep.
Bad news. I saw something unusual talking about weather here. In slide 45, as you click on the picture, it's a map for today showing the ultraviolet penetration across the United States, and including Alaska up there. Now, the higher the number, like 10, 11, whatever, that's extreme ultraviolet penetration, and they're usually measuring that as UVA and B. And what we're seeing here is an anomaly in what is that? That's in New Mexico, right? I think yes, right. Number two, why is it so low? Why is the ultraviolet penetration over that state so low. You know, everywhere else is like 10, 11, whatever. In the eastern, northeastern states, you see threes and fives, but two. For the life of me, I've just not seen this before, is how can the ultraviolet penetration be almost zilch over that state? Heavy cloud cover? What? I mean, everybody else has clouds. But anyway, it's just something, an anomaly that I saw when I went to that index.
And here I was going to call you and ask you why, and you don't know. Okay.
I have no idea. It's got to be some kind of a weather phenomenon, I guess, shielding it. But it'd be interesting to know whatever it is. It'd be nice to have it to shield the rest of the country, because that hurts crops and people and everything. Yeah. Okay. Right. Let's go up to slide 49. A few weeks back, I went to our dry cleaners and was talking with one of the owners there. And she also has a ranch, a few thousand acres where they raise steers, or, you know, feed them and slaughter them, whatever. But I think they have about 400 or 500 head out there. Well, 2 weeks ago, about 14 of them dropped dead, just died. There were no signs of, you know, what caused it. The first impression was, well, is it anthrax? So they quarantined that area for a couple of days and checked it out. No, it wasn't anthrax. Was it the heat? And any farmer or rancher will know that it takes several days for your cattle to be hurt by heat and to their systems to react and for them to dehydrate and to die. They didn't die from heat exhaustion or, you know, heat prostration or whatever. So while she was talking to me, she got a phone call, and they had lost four more steers that just dropped dead, just stopped functioning. Now, in slide 49, it says cattle deaths explained, ? NASA warns of deadly magnetosphere rifts that allow intense solar radiation to wipe out large numbers of animals on Earth. The mysterious cattle death that took place over the weekend in Kansas, now rumored to exceed 10,000 head of cattle, have defied traditional explanations. So we're in Colorado, they're in Kansas, next state over. So holes in our magnetosphere, because our magnetic field of the Earth is weakening, have allowed the ultraviolet B, the UVB rays, to come in more concentration. And they even think that rifts in the magnetic field in the past, you know, hundreds, thousands of years or whatever, have been responsible for extinctions, like for the Neanderthals. They thought that they might have been killed not by an asteroid impact, but by holes in the magnetic field allowing UVB to come from the sun, and it kills them. You don't want to be in UVB territory. It's damaging to your genes, your DNA. And over in slide 50, the next slide over, you see, click on the picture, and you see a normal helix, you know, DNA, a normal thing for the human or any animal. And then the UVB photon comes in and hits that DNA helix and knocks off chunks. You see to the right there. Now you think, well, wow, that's cumulative. If we're out in that UVB for too long, we're done. Our DNA will malfunction. We're going to be having boils or nausea or just drop dead. Well, the body does have a natural mechanism to repair DNA damage, like unfortunately, but it is limited. When you have huge concentrations of UVB hitting your DNA, they can't repair it fast enough. And when it gets ahead of the repair cycle, you're going to suffer, you know, like permanent and possibly fatal damage. And you can read down there in the text that I put there about, what does it say here? Without the layer of ozone in the stratosphere to protect us from excessive amounts of UVB radiation, life as we know it would not exist. Scientific concern over ozone depletion in the upper atmosphere has prompted extensive efforts to assess the potential damage to life on Earth due to the increased levels of UVB radiation. With the sun acting up, and it certainly has been acting up, it's... in fact, let's just go down and look at that.
Before you move on, let me ask you a question. So about the cattle and the magnetosphere, did I say that right? Magnetosphere? Say it with
me. Yeah, that sounds good. That works. Okay. That works.
All right. That thing. So why just like 14 or 15 as opposed to like the entire herd, all of them? Is it
Yeah, there are holes, you know, rifts, the tears that appear, and they're not like global blankets. There are holes in the magnetosphere allowing the UVB to get through. That goes back to that UV chart I was showing you where, to the left of Texas, there's that two. Right. It's virtually non-existent. What caused that? Did that protect the animal life underneath that? Was there a hole? In fact, if you look at the state levels of these things, the UVB penetration, et cetera, is spotty. And so maybe it dropped over that portion of Colorado here where we are, but in a kind of a narrow band, but the rift over Kansas was big enough to hit that herd. Maybe that's what happened. That's why, I looked at that anomalous two over there on that UV map and thinking, well, gee, that's nice. That'd be good to shield us against that stuff. Maybe that's what's explaining the randomness, apparent randomness of the cattle deaths. I don't know. It's just, I'm glad it's not anthrax, but it's a thing much more dangerous if it's the UVB penetration. Now,
would that show up in a necropsy or an autopsy of animals? How would that present in such a fashion? I'm just, inquiring what minds want to know.
Well, I guess they'd have to find out what system on the cows or the steers failed, then take some samples of the tissue and do a DNA analysis to see if the DNA has been compromised.
Gotcha.
It take a while, but they could do it. They do know that this happens.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
In fact, several years back, probably 10 years ago, I think, we had a hole in the ozone layer over Central America, kind of eastward there, where it went back to the great South Atlantic anomaly, magnetic anomaly drifted. It opened up and it incorporated a few islands south of Cuba. And I actually talked to some of the people at the time it was happening, and the ultraviolet was causing them to have skin irritations, diarrhea, disorientation. Had to close the schools and take the kids in and out of all of this kind of stuff. So I do know that, you see the effect pretty quickly when it happens. A hole in the ozone layer. But when you get the magnetosphere opening up great holes all over the place, the damage is going to be more widespread. And depending upon how long the holes stay open, it's going to hurt, I think, not even just animals, but also plant life. We've had to put up shielding on our gardens this year, 40% shade cloth on the broadleaf plants and things, because they were getting sunburnt and going pale yellow from the intensity of the sun. Fortunately, the shielding is working, and things are, tomatoes and peppers and stuff are working again. But anyway, it's there's something wrong out there with the sun, and something wrong with our magnetosphere. Let's see if there's a chart on slide 39. Let's look at that chart. If you go to that and click on the picture, Eric, this is from May of 2018. It's a 5-year chart showing the amount of electromagnetic radiation, light, visible and non-visible, coming from the sun over this 5-year period. And you'll notice that the graph has gone just absolutely ape starting in January of last year, 2021 in January. It starts to wildly fluctuate between dim and bright, and then it just goes up and up to the right where we are now in May, June of 2022. Now, this is generally saying all kinds of light coming from the sun have increased. That's what they call the solar irradiance of all the light coming from the sun. Now, this is also because the sun itself is producing more coronal mass ejections, more active regions on the sun. And so I ask you to look at slide 38 right next to that, where I compare the field lines, the magnetic field lines, those white lines, that indicate where the magnetic fields are on the sun. Now, you can see in the left side of that picture, if you get it up there, the left image, you can see that I talked about the last few weeks about this kind of V-shaped thing going toward the equator, where these magnetic field lines, this was the 1st of June, they cross over the equator so that the magnetic fields and active regions in the southern and northern hemispheres are joining across the equator, which tends to pull that part of the surface of the sun together a bit. It's a mechanical pull. But then you look at where we are now over on the right side, and you see that, 3 weeks later, 19 days later, something like that, 20 days later, that the magnetic fields facing us now are, not so much across the equator, on this side of the sun. And again, that makes it a lopsided pull on the surface of the sun on the other side that we're seeing around the first. So this is something we have to pay attention to, is the magnetic field behavior on the sun. And this behavior, to me, is showing an instability, and will get worse. Look at slide 37. It's in several wavelengths to let you see it better. And this is from, yesterday, June the 20th. Again, you see these white lines. Some of them are crossing right in the middle of the picture, crossing from the north to the south. And these are mechanical forces. These magnetic fields surrounding these active regions are sunspot groups primarily, but they're tugging at the surface of the sun there and trying to pull those parts together. They're like magnets attracting. I can see this. I know from looking at it for years that this is not good. The sun is definitely going to be a driver in what happens here in the near future. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. And like this, the solar activity indirectly does increase volcanic and earthquake activity on the planet, depending where the moon is at various positions with the sun. But these electromagnetic fields get into our Earth's magnetic field when they come from the sun, and they are drivers in the electric field of the Earth, which, you know, does interact with the earthquake zones. I mean, we see charges on these things on the coastal regions, particularly where the plate tectonics join, that are sensitive to magnetic changes. And these cause earthquakes to occur, more rapidly and in places they wouldn't normally do. Now, what I did was in slide 40 through 42, I've looked at the earthquakes for the week in each of these, May 30th through June 6th. And if you click on the picture, it'll show you that in the Aleutians and Alaska and the North American continent, that the earthquakes in that week were 1,307 of the 1,671 earthquakes that are on the planet at that time. Well, 1,307 of them occurred during that May 30th, June 6th period. If you go over to the slide 41 and click on it, this is a week later, there's now 1,478 earthquakes in that same plot of the planet. And you can see them increasing in the California region and also in Alaska and down the Aleutians. Now let's look at this week, 14th of June through the 21st of June, and you see that we're now at 1,668 as opposed to 1,307 2 weeks ago. So these earthquakes, even though they're not huge, are indicative of stresses releasing all over and perhaps presaging a massive release of a earthquake somewhere, whether it be in California or not. You can click on that picture, put your mouse over California and click on it for our period of time now up to the 22nd. That's right. Click zoom on California. Just put your mouse over that area and click on that picture of California. Just, it should zoom it up. On mine, I'm looking at a huge picture, but anyway, you can see down there that the Juan de Fuca plate, and that's in the kind of the left side, has been having a number of earthquakes over the last week. You don't want to see, earthquake releases there. Well, I guess you do if you have a bunch of small ones, but this is indicating a weakness in the plate, which we've known that it's like now 60 years overdue for a massive adjustment of the pressures on the Juan de Fuca plate. And that's where we're seeing these earthquakes that are in the last week. And down, of course, into the Baja in that area. I'm more concerned with the coastal regions like that. So anyway, that's telling you that the number of earthquakes is increasing, indicating that it's like I use the plexiglass analogy. When you bend a piece of plexiglass until it breaks, as you start to get to the breaking point, what happens is that you see little micro fractures all along the pressure zone where you're going to break the plexiglass plate until you snap it, and then the big one occurs. So it's preliminary small fractures, and that's how I look at the earthquakes here in this map on slide 42.
Wow.
As possibly being the thing here.
Yeah. Oh, my. Okay.
Let's see here. Yeah. Spaceweather.com, I go to that frequently to look at things, and slide 44 is where I've clicked on it, click on the text, And it tells us about a fast-growing sunspot that has doubled in size in 24 hours. It's like I'm telling you, things are ramping up on the sun and the Earth. The earthquakes are increasing at the same time. Are they connected? I think so. But the mechanism, we could argue what causes it to connect and cause that. But I think it's magnetic field variables. Anyway, if you look at that sunspot, if you click on the text, it'll take you over to spaceweather.com where I got this. And there's a movie. It's a very short thing. If you click on it, it shows you that that sunspot is just, growing. That's 24 hours. Look at that. Yeah. Mm. Is that the movie part or the picture part? If you, when you're over at spaceweather.com, you can get onto the, right there in that top paragraph where it says big sunspot alert. There's a thing that says movie, but you look at that active region, it shows you in 24 hours how much it's grown. So this is worrying to me, and it should be worrying to a lot of people at the moment. But so go to this site frequently. Oh, by the way, on that, while we're on that site, the last 2 or 3 years, we've seen reports of strange aerial phenomenon looking like these squirrels or, right there. There you go. Back down. And usually this kind of a thing is formed by a booster rocket of some description, still firing stuff or emitting gases as it spins out of control and it leaves this swirl pattern. It's not UFOs or anything like that. But when you see that, don't be thinking it's a Stargate or, black hole to take you to somewhere else or whatever. But a lot of people think different things, but it's basically just when a rocket is spinning out, it's finished its booster stage and it's still emitting gases from it as it spins out of control and then eventually burns up in the atmosphere. But interesting things. Right. Now, let's get back over here. Okay. Now, in Turkey, Turkey is a strange place at the moment with Erdogan at the helm. He's been ill. He's had heart problems and whatever for the last year and a half, and he's actually had some Israeli doctors look at him to cure him. But there is a sort of friendship forming between Turkey and Israel, which is odd in that Turkey and Mohammed bin Salman and the Arab nations are now kind of into a consortium because they've warned, the Israeli government has warned Israelis in Turkey, don't go out of your hotels, don't go out anywhere because there are terrorism attacks, against Israelis in Turkey. Now, is that Turkey's fault? Well, who knows? But when they start warning the population, to stay indoors or get out of the country, it's serious. And that's what they're doing. You see slide 57.
Sounds like any blue city in the United States, but go ahead. I mean, different reasons, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's the article there. And for well over a week now, the Israeli government has been urging Israelis in Turkey to return home as soon as possible, not just stay safe in your hotel room, but get out of the country. It has also admonished those unable or unwilling to cut short their holidays not to frequent shops, restaurants, or tourist attractions, and if possible, not to leave their rooms at all. Now, what's driving this activity? Is it just the terrorists, or is it the Turkish government? This is a worry. I've seen in the news in the last 6-7 years in Turkey, where a lot of the media have been saying over there carefully that they think that Israel should be allowed to build Solomon's Temple on the Temple Mount and be able to worship God their way and still have the Arab mosque there on the Temple Mount. So, there's a dichotomy of opinions there in Turkey about how to deal with Israel. And this movement of the Arab nations under Mohammed bin Salman is a worry to me in that it's forming a consortium of heavyweight that could be used against Israel at the drop of a hat. And I don't trust, the Arab nations over there. They're notorious for being, deceivers. So anyway, I think that we're going to see something in the Middle East that's going to be a surprise to a lot of people that aren't watching this. And it's going to be upon us very shortly. Iran, and now Iran has got fingers into Syria and fingers into the Lebanon, which borders on the north of Israel. In fact, look at slide 56. Iran hacks Israel's missile alert system. Now, the Iranians hacked it, I think, from within Lebanon, but they could have done it from somewhere else I don't know about. But what they've done is they've hacked the civilian early warning systems for missile attacks. And a Qassem rocket is fired on Sadarat from militants in Gaza. Now, okay, this rocket is fired. I don't know whether the hack came from Gaza Strip or whether it came from the Lebanon or even from Jordan, but this is a civilian early warning system that they've hacked. Now, the military things in Israel are a lot more hardened to hacking and interference in their early warning system. But anyway, this is, telling you that they are getting ready. They're testing systems, the enemies of Israel are, to see what they can all coordinate and do at the same time so that they can bring Israel down. I don't think they will succeed, but there's certainly going to be a lot of heartache that Israel is going to inflict on the invading forces or would-be invaders of Israel. Just keep an eye on that. It's coming.
Hackers. Between hackers and robocallers, I want to I tell you what, they should have, take their hands off, and they should have stubs, okay, because so they can't, touch their keyboard. Hackers. Pisses me off. Sorry about that, but go ahead.
It does. They do. Hey, have you noticed my red cheeks and stuff? I've been out in the sun a bit here. It's been in short burst, obviously, but I guess I better start using some of that.
SPF 1000.
At least. Okay. Yeah. I feel like Santa Claus at the moment, but.
Oh, man. No, you look good. I'll tell you what. No, see, in the big picture, I wanted to see you next time sit in the chair over your left shoulder, the right of my screen. But I'm kidding for the next show. But anyway, but by the way, I got to tell you this on air as opposed to off air, but I was going to tell you off air, but I didn't. Next week, I have to be, I am required to be in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday and Wednesday.
So we're skipping next week.
I've got to. And it's not because I want to. Believe me. It's not because I want to. So anyway, all right. So, and I'll just leave it there.
All right. All right. All right. All right, sir. Well, then it's, I'll see you in a week.
We still can talk. We got 2 minutes left.
Do we?
Eric the Tech, how much time do I have left? 3 minutes?
Oh, good. I thought we were done.
45? No, we got 2 minutes plus.
All right. All right. Well, okay. Now I think tomorrow's the day I've got to go out and chainsaw with one of these handheld mini chainsaws and get up into the branches of our big trees and cut down a lot of branches that are broken in the winds we've been getting here because they've been enormous winds.
Here too, by the way.
Say again?
Here as well. I told Eric the Tech, I said, what is this? Gale force winds around here, but what do I know?
Again, it's an early summer, early spring. It's, as I've said several times, the climate is changing and the weather, the climate is drifting a certain way. And so we're ahead of schedule now and getting these exceptional winds because of the difference in temperature in the United States and elsewhere. When you have this extreme difference of hot and cold moving across the country, it produces these tremendous weather storms and weather events. And we've actually gotten some rain here in Colorado, in the area where we are in the high desert, unexpectedly because of this strangeness. Even though we're in the middle of an extreme drought for 2 years, 3 years now, we're seeing these wandering changes in the climate affecting our plants, our growth, and whatever. Mm. I'm battling squirrels right now in the orchard. The little devils are getting into our apple trees and peach trees, and mainly the apple trees. And the apples are only, they're still about that big. They're not fully developed. And the little devils are getting up there and pulling off these green apples and eating them. If you and I did that, we'd have the runs for a week, but not the squirrels. So anyway, it's a constant battle.
Yeah, man, little squirrels up there going, chewing with their, leaving cores on the ground, right?
Yeah. Oh, you can see them out there just going away at happy times. And I found out that I can soak my apple pieces, get a store-bought apple and soak them in some apple cider vinegar or apple cider, sorry. And once they're firmly soaked in it, I can put them in the trap, which is a rectangular cage, and I can relocate these little Dickenses. Anyway.
Rumor has it they don't like that, but then again, what do I know? Standale, standale.com. Make sure you bookmark standale.com and also support them on Patreon, Cosmic Conspiracy, Dare to Prepare, so much there. Gotta go. Good night. Stan, thanks.
God bless you. See you in two. All right, bye-bye.